Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number two of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Man, that first hour flew by. Anytime we have any kind of like heated debate, usually it does. As I said, I was speaking with Brady Henderson last night about a couple of different things concerning the Seahawks, but I'm really interested in what's going on with Antonio Brown and how interested the Seahawks actually are and what kinds of concerns they may have about signing him or being interested in him at all, right? I mean, I'll let Brady explain it, but Brady, first of all, it's good to have you on here. What types of things, and I'm not talking about the commissioner handing down a suspension necessarily, but if the Seahawks are interested in Antonio Brown, what types of concerns might they have and what types of things might they be vetting?
Yeah, well, there is interest there, and just like they have interest in a lot of players. And from what I understand, you know, they have the interest that they've shown in him so far has really been due diligence, which, you know, they do with a lot of players. And I think, you know, there is, from what I understand, a lot to be, and from what anybody could tell just by looking at the situation, you know, there is a lot to be sorted out with him, you know, before anything happens there. And that's what I heard. And I took that to mean that I would imagine that means that, you know, the allegations of sexual assault are the big thing there. And, you know, there's been so much with Antonio Brown over the last, 10 months or so that, I guess it's kind of easy to forget individual incidents, and there is a very serious one that he's dealing with right now, which is allegations of sexual assault against his former trainer, Brittany Taylor, which came out, I believe, in September, right after he signed with the Patriots. So when I hear that a lot has to be sorted out in his life, I take that to mean that situation has to be resolved, and I just cannot imagine the Seahawks signing him with that, you know, with that issue still hanging out there like it is right now.
So just going back a few years, and every case is different. We're not talking about the exact same charges or even allegations. But going back to somebody like Frank Clark from 5 years ago, does that in any way affect their decision-making now, all the, I guess, the backlash that they dealt with then?
Yeah, I think it does, Tom, because there was backlash. And for people who don't remember that, you know, they drafted Frank Clark in the second round, and he had been accused of domestic violence. I believe that it later got pleaded down to disorderly conduct or some sort of lesser charge like that. And, you know, there was a lot of backlash, both publicly but also internally, when they drafted him. I have really gotten the sense since then that is a road that they are a lot more, you know, wary of going down, and they have been a lot more cautious with anybody tied to that. And so, you know, I think with Antonio Brown, you could maybe live with, you know, the frozen feet. You can live with the helmet fiasco, maybe. You can live with some of that other stuff of just being kind of a pain in the rear. But for an organization like this, I just have a hard time imagining them being able to live with something like this unless it's resolved, unless, you know, maybe the allegations turn out to be not true, or maybe the, you know, the accuser recants what she said. I don't know what that looks like, or what that would have to be. It's really hard for me to imagine them wanting to go down that road again. Obviously, it's, as you said, different situations, nations and whatnot, but I just have really gotten the sense that they have taken a very cautious approach ever since what happened with Frank Clark.
Brady, it is interesting the point that you point out, and obviously that's the reason why Antonio Brown has not been signed by anybody up to this point. The Seahawks continue to be interested and continue to vet the situation. What if it was a situation like Michael Kendricks, for example, that the legal situation that is there is still ongoing, but there isn't a timeline of when that decision is going to be made, or that timeline seems to be further out than the season's end?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and that brings in that raises the question of just the timing of this, and nobody really knows the timing, just because it's not only the legal system that has to play out, but also the NFL could come in and, you know, as they did with Jaron Reed last summer, you know, suspend him even though he was not even charged or arrested for anything that happened in April, I think it was April of 2017. So you're talking about not only was he not charged or arrested, but that was 2 years after the fact that the NFL came in and handed out its own discipline. So there's a timing issue. There's an NFL issue here. I think what would be what stands out as different to me about the Kendricks situation than Brown's situation is that, you know, Kendricks was he admitted, you know, he took full responsibility for what he did and he admitted it, and you know, that was so. I think there was an element of, you know, believing that the guy deserved a second chance, and I don't know if you could really say that with Antonio Brown, at least in this instance, because I don't believe that he is. You know, admitting guilt. I believe that he is fighting these allegations. So those situations seem a little bit different to me just in that regard.
Now, Brady, you know, we talk about different additions that could potentially happen to the team, and you know, Antonio Brown, Josh Gordon, you look at Jadeveon Clowney, all these things are just kind of on the periphery here, and I just learned not that long ago that, you know, Jamal Adams is somebody that is on the table and in discussions. You know, which of those guys do you see being the most likely candidate for the Seahawks to be able to bring aboard to their team?
Yeah, can you give me the names again, Jake? It was Clowney, Jamal Adams, and who else?
Clowney, Jamal Adams, Antonio Brown, and Josh Gordon.
Yeah. Well, Josh Gordon is an interesting one just because I know that they are interested in him as well, and he is definitely interested in them. I've talked to people close to him who have told me that. And he really loved playing in Seattle. He really has an admiration for Russell Wilson. He's kept his, you know, he's stayed living in Seattle, and that's part of the reason why. You know, I think the big difference between him and Antonio Brown is, you know, one is that they know what they know what Josh Gordon was like in that locker room. And by all accounts, from everything I've heard, he was just a pleasure to be around. He was not an issue. He came in, he got his work done, he got along with people. He was not disruptive in any way. And the risk that you would take on with somebody like Josh Gordon is that, you know, if God, you know, God forbid, he had another relapse, he would be gone, and that would be similar from the team standpoint, from an availability standpoint, as a guy getting injured. You know, whereas the downside with Antonio Brown is that he you know, continues to be a pain in the rear like he has been in other places, and he ends up, you know, being a disruptive figure in the locker room and whatnot. So I think I said on your show last week or the week before that between those two, Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown, I think that Gordon is more likely. Obviously, he doesn't have the upside of somebody like Antonio Brown, who's, you know, still one of the best receivers in the NFL, but maybe the downside would not be as great.
How feasible is a trade for Jamal Adams? What do you think that the Seahawks would have to give up?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. It all depends on what, you know, how willing the Jets are to move on from him. It, you know, they control his rights for two more years. You know, the way I see that situation differently than some of the other blockbuster trades the Seahawks have pulled off for big name players before, whether it was Dwayne Brown, 2017, Jadeveon Clowney last year, is that, you know, left tackle was a huge need for them in 2017. Pass rusher, your defensive end, was a huge need for them last year. Remember, all offseason, the question is, where is the Seahawks pass rush going to come from? Very similar to the question this offseason, but, you know, remember, you didn't have, you know, Ziggy Ansah, you know, playing. He wasn't really doing a whole lot. He got hurt. So there was a big need there at defensive end, just like there was at left tackle. And I don't think that need is as great at safety right now. And so that's why I have a hard time imagining them being willing to give up what they did for those two players. And if you're the Jets, and they're, you know, and if you have, you know, other teams bidding on you or bidding on Adams with you, it's hard to imagine the Seahawks offer being as high as it would be for other teams who need safety help more than the Seahawks do.
I want to get into a really quick question. I know that none of us know what next year's salary cap is going to look like, particularly after the effect that COVID has on league earnings. But looking outside of whether or not there might hypothetically be space, is there a player at the forefront of your mind that you feel like is really going to be competing for a new contract with Seattle that would be their top priority if he had a good year?
Yeah, Shaquille Griffin is one player that comes to mind, and obviously Chris Carson too. You know, Shaquille Griffin, I think, you know, he's looks like an ascending player. It was a Pro Bowl alternate last year, plays a very important position, and also a position where, on the other side, you know, there's long-term uncertainty because Quentin Dunbar only has the 1 year left on his contract. So those two guys, you know, Chris Carson, I know he recently had a new agent, Murphy McGuire, and it just seems like, especially with Carson, with the way the running back market is, and the fact that there's not a lot of money right now, I think that if there's an extension done, that's probably going to be more on the Seahawks' terms than it is on his terms, just because I don't see, you know, how Carson has a ton of leverage right now. Maybe a little bit more so for Shaquille Griffin, but I, you know, just with the way that their, you know, financial situation is right now, I'm starting to wonder if those are going to happen. It's more likely, you know, after this year as opposed to right now. But you never know, because this is the time of the year when typically, you know, they do move on to those extensions for guys that are already under contract. And you talk about it, when you're get the big extension done last summer, you've seen it with other guys. And you know, once free agency and once the draft get knocked out, the next thing on that to-do list is to sign guys that, that have one more year left on their contract. I just haven't gotten the sense that with Carson especially, that anything is really moving there.
Brady, terrific stuff as always. We appreciate you jumping on with us today. Brady Henderson of ESPN.com. Thanks a bunch, man.
All right. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Bye, Brady.
Let's go to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by MM Comfort Systems.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Oh, yeah, Jake. We haven't had a chance to talk to you about Patrick Mahomes' new deal. What was your first reaction?
Well, my first reaction when I was hearing the details was, one, I was in shock that it happened due to the timing, and B, I was like, man, this is a blockbuster deal. This is an unbelievable deal. Good for Mahomes. And then you look at the details of the contract, guys. It's unfortunate. Like, I it's funny to say that about a guy who's going to make a bunch of money, but Patrick Mahomes is putting himself at the team's mercy every single year. Now, the reality is that you hope that Patrick Mahomes is able to live out that 10-year deal and he's able to continue to be successful, but Donovan McNabb was signed to a 10-year deal, and did that last for 10 years? No, it didn't. So, you know, I think that it's an interesting situation. And think about this. The guaranteed money that Patrick Mahomes signed for was $65 million, I believe, $65. And Ryan Tannehill, this last year on his current deal, had $62 million guaranteed. That's, I mean, really? That's the only difference in guaranteed money that Patrick Mahomes gets at from this contract? I mean, that is the shocking part of it all, guys. And you look at Russell Wilson's deal and the way that it's structured. I mean, there is more guaranteed money going to Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, than there is Patrick Mahomes. So if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, you're that organization, you are having a party, because not only do you have Patrick Mahomes for 12 years, but you also got it in a situation that is very friendly to your organization in a lot of different ways. And you have opportunities to opt out, redo the contract, things of that nature. So I think the Kansas City Chiefs were the bigger winners, more so than Patrick Mahomes necessarily.
Second down. By the way, Jake, we corrupted this segment badly the first 3 days of the week. Stacy answered like pretty normal questions, two of them, and Curtis just asked me trivia questions.
Which, by the way, wait, let's ask Jake, did you listen to our shows when you were gone?
Yeah, of course, every minute of it.
Oh, really? Then Jake, since 2017, there's only been one player besides Russell Wilson to throw a pass for the Seahawks. Who was it?
Trevon Boykin?
Wrong. Josh Gordon. I did it. A lot of people
actually
were texting.
Trevon. Yeah, if you went back to 2016, it would be, you could add Trevon Boykin to that. So,
or Doug Baldwin, but too bad, it's 2017. I'm right.
Yeah, get with the times. It's 2017. All right.
Sorry.
Stacey, yes. What are the NFL's new game day protocols?
All right. In addition to forcing all post-game interactions to be 6 feet or more of separation, other highlights include, this is all from ESPN.com, Adam Schefter and Tom Pelissero of NFL.com. Coaches and players who are not likely to appear in the game are strongly encouraged to wear masks on the sideline. So head coaches, maybe like a coordinator or someone doesn't. Players obviously do not, but everyone else is going to be asked to do so or encouraged to do so. Players and coaches have to submit multiple temperature checks before games. You are not allowed to participate, whether you're a coach, player, anyone, even on the bench, if you have a fever of more than 100.4 degrees. Also, within locker rooms, including game day locker rooms, so for both visitors and home teams, they have to space lockers 6 feet apart. The lockers are not movable, so I'm assuming they're just going to do every other locker. Plexiglass partitions are also an option. I won't be able to tell you what it looks like because one other thing is that media is not permitted in the locker room. Arrangements must be made to ensure that there aren't shared water cups or water bottles. So I'm guessing that when you walk around and you're like the water kid and you're like squirting Gatorade into a player's mouth, I'm going to guess that's not going to be an option this year. Also, this from ESPN.com, players are required to spend the night before games at the team hotel, even if they are playing in their home stadium. I'm not sure if that was already something they did, but anyways, so the policies are in effect for the preseason as well. I'm guessing the reason they still want those two preseason games is to test out a lot of these policies, because it's not like there's going to be fans in attendance that we know of. So that's what's on the books right now. In addition to the very controversial and oft-tweeted about today rule that there will be no jersey exchanges post-game. Deshaun Watson now getting in on that debate, by the way.
Yeah, what's he saying?
I'll tell you what he's saying. He also doesn't like it, but now I got to go back to his Twitter account. He retweeted someone that said it was silly. Oh, no, he said it. He said that's, editorializing, that's dang silly, bro. And then he said, then explain to me, why are they allowing us to play at all? The other four quarters don't matter. I don't understand. So kind of the same thing people are saying before. And then someone said, well, the difference is that you're next to people. And he said, have you ever played in a professional football game? You don't think that when you get tackled, sweat and saliva is there, or during timeouts or in a huddle between plays, guys aren't talking to each other face to face? So he's saying, like, there's already so much just
of like, course close they do. That's not the point. So if you're lucky enough to not get it when you're laying on the ground face to face with whoever, then you're telling me you're going to take somebody's sweaty jersey and then increase your chances of getting it there?
I'm not pitting on
their jersey. I don't understand what's so complicated about this. Huh?
I'm not pitting the jersey on. I'm taking it and pitting
it on.
Yeah,
but you're still
locker.
Handling it.
Well, presumably, again, due to the NFL game day protocols, that player will not have had a temperature of over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Obviously Fahrenheit, but still.
But you can be asymptomatic. We know this.
I know, but I don't know what to tell you, Tom. I've decided we disagree on this, and I will not budge.
That's the problem.
This
you
is my new lifestyle.
You've decided to adhere to your own agenda regardless
They're
of the
testing.
Facts. Third down!
They're testing.
I'll tell you what. The other thing you said about taking guys' temperatures, mm-hmm. like, what, twice before game day? How are they going to do that? For every
coaching? Have you ever been to the doctor where they do the temperature check that they just wave in front of your face? It's
oh, that's
non-contact.
Right. You're right. You're
it's
right.
Really cool. It feels like I'm in space.
Yeah, you don't have to use
the futures now. They're just spitting a thermometer in everyone's mouth.
Gross.
Jake, Russell Wilson worked out with Antonio Brown over the weekend. Now, why do you think that happened?
Well, I think it happened because I think there's, when you talk about the team doing their due diligence, I think the other part of it is, you know, how does he look? Is he actually ready to go? And I think that, you know, Russell doesn't do anything without a purpose behind it. And so that workout, I think, was another check mark to evaluate AB and see how he is, see how he handles himself. And to get a better feel for him. And so I think that that was another box checked on the process. And I think that the Seahawks are continuing to really pursue this and vet this situation and And I would not be surprised by the end of this if he's on the team after all the work that they have done. I also wouldn't be surprised if they walk away. But for people to dismiss this, I think you're missing out on this, on the true interest that the Seahawks really have.
I believe that they have all the interest in the world. I put a piece up on 710sports.com making a couple of predictions, one of which is that Antonio Brown will not be a Seahawk. Jake, if I hadn't written the article and like gotten it out of my system last night, I'd be fighting you a lot more in this too. But I don't really feel like doing it.
No, now you're tired out.
Right. I'm glad, Jake.
I'm glad you put it in typing rather than at me. I appreciate that.
The text line says, Tom, why don't you wash your hands and don't put the jersey in your mouth? Makes
good
you think.
Good point.
It's a great point.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't. Fourth down. Oh, we already on fourth down. Sorry, bud. We have talked about the benefit of the NFL getting a chance to watch other leagues try to play first. What do you think they've learned so far, Jake?
That you have to have testing. Initial testing go right. The problem is that you look at the Mariners, they're one of the few teams that actually had a smooth process with the testing that the MLB did right out of the gate. I mean, there were so many players that were reported that their tests went missing or that they were stuck in a hotel because it was taking too long for their tests to come back. I mean, that's a disaster. And if you're the NFL, you have to make sure that your process is clean and smooth and to feel make everybody feel comfortable, make everybody feel safe. And those are things that if you're the NFL, you have to make sure you're getting things done right and done more smoother than what MLB did coming out of the gate. And I think that that's a big part of it.
Remember, you now have radios in your home, smart speakers. Tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. Could Jamal Adams be a Seahawk? We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Jamal Adams to the Seahawks? You know, we're lucky up here because we cover a team that wants to be in on every player that's available. Like, they're going to see it through and they're going to make sure. They're going to basically prove to themselves that they don't want that player. So every time a player looks like they may become available, and Jamal Adams is basically just pushing for that to happen. He's still under contract to the Jets. But could he be a Seahawk, Jake? If so, why?
Well, I think that actually the opportunity is higher than we think. I mean, that's the part for me that I was – when this news came about that it was, you know, out there and – that he would like an opportunity to be a Seahawk, I thought there's no way. And actually, in further discussions and in talking with a friend who's in a front office in with another team, just confirmed the fact that the Seahawks are actually pursuing Jamal Adams. They're not just there on the periphery, but they're pursuing him. And I think that that's an interesting thing when you look at the Seahawks and look at what they're trying to do on their defense. They know that they need to continue to keep getting better. Obviously, everybody would love for them to continue to upgrade at the edge rush position. But if they can add a player like Jamal Adams at that safety position, I mean, that's a pretty special thing for them to accomplish, to have that combination between him and Quandre Diggs. It'll be interesting to see if they can put it all together. But I think it's one of those things where the Seahawks are going to be one of the teams that are willing to invest, willing to put a trade out there. But obviously, they're letting this situation come to them in the sense that I don't think they're going to overextend themselves and be so eager to, you know, be the team that's giving the best offer right at the beginning, if that makes sense.
I imagine John Schneider being like that person that, like, just walks by a group of people discussing something and is like, I don't know, I would do it, and then just walks away. Like, he just kind of drops a line at all times, you know what I mean? Always just kind of entertaining it. Never being serious, yeah. But waiting for you to come back and be like, did you say you were interested in that again, John? That's John Schneider.
You know what? He may be the exception to the rule, but I don't understand why more GMs wouldn't behave that way. Like, if they hear Jamal Adams, you think so? You think everybody's in on him? to the extent that the Seahawks are?
Not everyone being in. I mean, there are some teams that either are not interested in. Maybe they believe in the young guys. Maybe they have someone they really like that they're giving an extension to or new contract to next year, and they don't even want to entertain someone that's going to be asking for a ton of money in a year or two. But I think that more teams than we think engage in hypothetical trade conversations, including the Seahawks, and we just never hear about them.
Yeah, that's true. But here's the other thing, though, too, is you look at Pete and John early in their tenure together, they were extremely aggressive, right? I mean, we mentioned a couple different trades that they made, Percy Harvin, Jimmy Graham. They were aggressive. Well, now that they've been able to establish themselves and that they have some, that they are comfortable with where they are. They are tenured. They are in a pretty comfortable spot, knowing that they're not necessarily on the hot seat as of right now, or over the last couple years, has allowed them the luxury to be confident and sit back and not be so eager. You have teams and GMs that need to win now, guys. They don't have the luxury of having, you know, 5-6 years to have everything panned out. They are being judged in a snapshot of 1 to 2 to 3 years, and they have to make something happen. I think that's the difference, Tom.
Quickly, but I know we got to move on to the next topic. Jake, would you rather have Jamal Adams or Antonio Brown if you had to choose?
Oh, Jamal Adams, because I think he would. I think he is more needed for that defense to be successful. I think the offense still has a chance to be very successful even without an Antonio Brown. I think they have enough offensive weaponry. Now it's a matter of, can they protect?
Stacey, you agree?
Yeah, the defense needs way more help than the offense does. Having someone like Antonio Brown or of his caliber, or even someone that's not as good, like someone like a Josh Gordon even, it would make them better, but they don't need to be significantly better. They need the defense to be better. And more than that, other teams in your own division are making steps there, so now you've got to worry about them creeping past you. Like, Arizona added a ton to their defense this offseason.
Plus, he hasn't assaulted anybody.
Well, Antonio Brown, Antonio Brown or Josh Gordon, it makes their offense scary, is what it does. Mm-hmm. It makes them scary. It makes every team worried about the Seattle Seahawks. Right now, everybody knows they're a good team, but it's kind of a wait and see to see what they're capable of.
All right, let's hear from Jerry DePoto, GM of the Mariners, on with Danny and Gallant this morning. Talking about Jared Kelnick, the guy I'm definitely interested in. Cut number 3.
And we get to hear it a couple times a day. You know, that just happened to be the most dramatic. It's, you know, he hit that ball off the Hit It Here Cafe and in a simulated game against LJ Newsome, and it was one of those where as soon as he hit it, you know, your jaw just dropped at the sound and obviously how far it went.
Guys, even if we don't see Jared Kelnick in a 60-game season, there's still a lot to look forward to in the following season, is there not? I mean, look, whatever they do this year, we hope we see some improvement with the guys that are on the field. But knowing that Kelnick is lurking in the background, that's got to make you feel good, right, Jake?
Oh, absolutely. It makes me feel extremely excited. And just to hear the genuine excitement that you hear from Jerry DePoto fires me up all the more. And so now it's just a matter of when, right? When is the appropriate time? And I firmly believe giving Jared Kelnick an opportunity to come up with the big league club the last 15 to 10 games of the season this year, just to get his feet underneath him and hopefully get some major confidence going, I think would be a tremendous thing to do. And it'll be interesting to see if they end up doing that.
Let's hear a different cut from Jerry DePoto here that we haven't heard yet. Cut number 5 on my man Kyle Lewis. Loving the confidence you're seeing from him.
Now we're starting to see a confident, multi-skilled, diverse baseball player. And, you know, sometimes that's been evident and sometimes you don't see that kind of self-confidence in Kyle. And you know, my observation from spring training, the first go around back in February and March, and what we've seen here now is that he knows that he is a complete player that can do all of these things and do them regularly. You can just see it, the way he carries himself and how he's running around in a very different way.
It's interesting, given that last September he looked about as confident as any baseball player.
You're telling me he's more confident?
Yeah, it's like that was him being underconfident when he hit six home runs in a month.
That was a bashful Jared Kilmer.
He drove in 13 RBIs. Yeah, that was him just like really doubting himself. So, yeah, whatever we're going to see out of him this year, much reason to be excited, guys. You know what that tells me? When you bring a player up, especially, you know, late in the year, like teams are accustomed to doing, that time is really important. Stacey, if he hadn't had that time last year, mm-hmm. we wouldn't be talking about him in this way, and certainly Jerry DePoto wouldn't either.
Kelnick? I don't know.
No,
I mean, he
Lewis.
Oh,
Lewis.
Oh. Yes, I do agree with that. I think he just came onto the scene with such a big thing, but also like more hardcore Mariners fans. Like Lydia's been talking about this guy even before his debut because she was really excited to see what he could be like when he came back from that knee injury. So I think there was a bit of an undercurrent there, but not what it is now. And he was on with Danny and Gallant this morning. I don't know if you guys listened to him, but the full interview, he is so likable. Like, such an easy guy to root for.
They got both guests.
Well, they have the DePoto show, so they have DePoto regularly, but then they had Kyle Lewis on this morning. Unfortunately for us, our show is during the Mariners' BP, so.
But isn't that convenient?
The Mariners are just scheduling it around. I meant to call Jerry and be like, hey, I want you to just consider this. Just marinate on it. How about you schedule batting practice around Tom, Jake, and Stacey? Think about it.
Why not? Hey, by the way, the other day, Lydia, when we were talking about her, mm-hmm. remember we were talking about like the pessimistic Mariner fans?
Versus
and then
optimistic.
We mentioned Lydia.
Yeah.
Yeah, like as an optimist. I feel like the way I said that about her came out wrong. Like I said it in almost like a derogatory way. Like
oh,
I don't have
no,
any
don't do
problem
that.
With anybody being optimistic.
I don't like, think Lydia's, yeah, well, I think her optimism comes from, Lydia is literally one of the most knowledgeable people I know about any sport, but particularly baseball. I usually listen, like if she's optimistic about something, I'm just immediately like, same. Yes, absolutely. Me too. I just take her word for it.
Well, I just wanted to give an on-air apology in case she was listening.
Okay, good.
All right. Coming up next, we got the timeline. A whole bunch of different stories here. Hopefully we can get to them all, including the misspelling of somebody's name. That's more important than you might think. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome into The Timeline. I'm Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. Now, this is primarily Twitter, so that's where I want you to tag us when you see stories you want us to include. At Stacey Rost, that's me, Rost with a T, at JT Heaps 9, at Tom Wassel. Tom probably feels it's very important that I tell you there are two L's in his name. Right, Tom?
Wassel.
Wassel. Gotcha. Don't worry. I got your back, man. All right. I'm going to go ahead and get this started with a tweet that actually came out earlier in our show. There have since been some developments. And that was initially a tweet from, gosh, I'm going to hate myself for mispronouncing her name because I see her stuff all the time. Nicole Auerbach, who tweeted that the Big Ten Conference could announce a conference-only schedule for all fall sports. And she also very recently tweeted the Pac-12 could be next. So it looks like the NCAA, at least the Power 5 conferences, are taking a step toward handling the football season their own way. Handling it their own way means playing in conference games. So this, according to Nicole, is multiple industry insiders. So she has multiple sources that they expect the Pac-12 to go to conference-only scheduling. And then the news about the Big Ten is it's initially reported by her, but it's all over the place. So it looks like they're going to announce it today, and that's pretty much all but confirmed.
It's big news there because obviously for a couple different reasons. One, you're not going to see the big, you know, crossover matchups early in the season. You're not going to see UW play Michigan, which mm-hmm. I was a little bummed about. I was looking forward to seeing that matchup in particular. But also, I take this as positive news in the sense that you saw the Ivy League schools, they shut down the season. They canceled sports. And you're seeing these other conferences saying that they are continuing to try and play, and that they are going to limit the travel for those players, for those coaches, and try to have some semblance of a season. And so if you're a sports fan in general, having some semblance of a season, to me, is very positive in the midst of all of this conversation of canceling sports. So although you're not getting all of the games this year, and you're probably not going to get a national championship game and all that fun in regards to bowl games, I just want to have some sort of season, guys.
Yeah, we were talking yesterday about this a bunch with Stanford canceling a bunch of their varsity sports, not football yet, but look, this seems like a beggars can't be choosers situation. We're all dealing with COVID in ways that we have to, and college football obviously not exempt from that. I mean, look at baseball. We're only playing in division and, how do I say this, against the National League division that is, you know, closest to us. So AL West, NL West, NL Central, AL Central, etc. If they only, especially the Pac-10, which I think is geographically the most spread out conference, like the SEC, they're all in this little belt together. Big Ten's kind of started to reach its tentacles out further lately, but Ivy League, they're all right there. Pac-12 goes from up here all the way down to Arizona and out to Colorado. That's a huge, huge area. So for them to be staying in conference, I think makes a lot of sense. I'm not really sure what the drawbacks are, other than you don't get those out-of-conference matches like Jake just mentioned there, where, you know, USC plays Notre Dame or UW plays Michigan or whatever. I mean, if we have to go 1 year without that, that's just the way it is.
And I have to issue, I want to issue a little baby amendment to that. So the Big Ten actually did release a press release less than an hour ago. They said the Big Ten Conference, well, this is on their official website, but it's third person. The Big Ten Conference announced today that if the conference is able to participate in fall sports based on medical advice, it will move to conference-only schedules in those sports. So that's been confirmed. And then there's also a report in addition to the Pac-12 being another conference that could do that. I mean, now we're all kind of expecting all of those Power Five conferences to fall in line, but that the ACC is one of those. This, though, is interesting. Two things. One, Bruce Feldman, college football writer for Fox Sports and The Athletic, says that the ACC coaches have been told of conference-only plans. The coaches haven't yet been told if it's definite, but this from Seth Emerson, who's a separate college football writer. He says there are four ACC-SEC annual rivalry games. We already know about them. Georgia-Georgia Tech, FSU-Florida, South Carolina-Clemson, and Kentucky-Louisville. Both leagues, meaning the ACC and SEC, also play 8 conference games. You could see the two leagues try to strike a scheduling agreement this year to preserve those rivalries. So maybe there is some kind of interconference play, but again, that would be mostly geographical because those are going to be like somewhat on the east or southeast. So that's the latest from college football. It's not that it's not looking great. It's just that's something I don't think that I expected to happen. I didn't expect conference only. Was this something that was being discussed?
I kind of did, Stacey, because when we were talking yesterday about how it's decentralized college football, you know, the NCAA is the governing body, but they can't possibly control what every single conference does. I thought that it would come down to the conferences and just organizing it that way. I thought that that would be the best they could do unless somebody had some better ideas. So if it goes that way, I mean, look, that's better than nothing. I think we'd all agree with that.
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Absolutely.
This next story really grinds Tom's gears. Steven Strasburg's name was misspelled on his World Series ring box. I would like to add that while we are not equal levels of athletes, nor are our athletic accomplishments at equal levels, I guess, I understand the feeling. I have a very commonly mispronounced and misspelled last name. It's Rost, R-O-S-T, but I've been called Stacey Roast multiple times, and my state swim sweater that you kind of have to buy because you're at state or divisions or whatever, it was Stacey Ross, and I was like, wow. The disrespect has been noted.
I understand.
I get
that.
It, Steven.
You know, this hits home because going back to when I was a kid, like whenever I was in say, like a jazz band performance at school or, you know, whatever it was, even if I were like in, you know, in theater or something like that, whenever the pamphlet, you know, that they hand out to people when they go to the show, whenever you'd get that, you'd see my name in there. It was always misspelled, always. And I'd be like riding home with my parents, and my dad would get so upset about it. He goes, "How come they always misspell your name, Tommy?" As if it's like my fault or something. So when I see somebody getting their name misspelled, like I get a little PTSD from that.
Oh,
I'm just
no.
like,
you feel like, you know, your dad is mad at you for it. I didn't do
well,
anything.
I knew that he wasn't. I knew that he wasn't, but like to a little kid, you don't really know. He would get so upset.
Can
over
I tell
it.
You,
oh, my God.
When I was in early elementary school to where like first grade or less, where I was still going to daycare, I specifically remember this. My first name is Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y, and I've always been an excellent speller, truly. Like in sixth grade, I was the one that helped kids with spelling. The teacher would recommend, like, I'm a prodigy. The little, like, daycare person or teacher or whatever told me I was spelling my name wrong on my cubby, so she made it S-T-A-C-E-Y, and I've never forgotten it to this day.
Ooh,
I hate you for that. I'll never forgive you for that.
All right, we're moving on here. We've got Lano Hill edition of Know Your Seahawk. Coming up next, boy, he's a guy who got put through the ringer last year. We'll talk about him. 710 ESPN Seattle.